Namaste, everyone. Welcome to the Charvak Podcast. This is your host, Kushal Mehra. All right, today's book is called The Autobiography of God, Self-Realization in five Practical Steps. And I have the author of the book, Lena Kumar, to talk about the book with me. She's an award-winning actor. She's a clinical psychologist, a scriptwriter. She's a renowned entrepreneur. She's had a long career in Indian cinema. And today we are going to talk about the book with her. So Lena, thanks for coming on the podcast. And how are you doing?
Thanks for having me on the podcast, Kushal. And I'm so happy to be here. I'm doing really well and really thrilled to be here.
Now we'll get to the title, but I want to start this. So, as you were telling me offline that you're not per se an author. So you have company here with me, because my first book is also about to is coming out and has come out, kind of a situation. But it's one thing being in front of a camera, in front of a screen, where you are, an expert, you read the script, you say things, or sometimes you improvise. So how was that journey for you, say, coming from the screen, where you are so used to being famous, to being an author? How was that journey?
Actually, it's all just been happening. I don't see it as much as a doing as a happening. If you had asked me before 2020 whether I would write a book, I would have been like, what? Like, what makes you ask me such a question would be the answer. And post 2020, just like if I was asked before I was 16 years old, do you see yourself being an actress? I would have been like, no. And now 25 years later, I'm one of the senior actresses from the Malayalam industry, and it still baffles me. And the same way, being an author now baffles me. And being a Penguin published author baffles me even more. So, I'm basically just somebody always in awe of the happenings and just doing whatever compels me to happen through me.
Now, this name, I know you even start the book, you quite clearly categorically state that, okay, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek name, but like, why did you think of this? Like, why the autobiography of, like, I can make a safe guess after reading your book, because of the direction you've taken in the book, why you say this is the autobiography of God. But why? I wanted to hear it from you.
Okay, so that's a bit of a story. So I was, I luckily got locked down inside an Ayurvedic resort during the first lockdown in 2020. And I'm saying I happened to, because I went there thinking I'll do a 10-day or 14-day rejuvenation thing. And I actually got locked down there for 4 months, during which I did a very deep Panchakarma cleansing. And actually, they say that Panchakarma needs to be done over a 3-month period. And so I just got to do that. And after that, there's a rejuvenation phase, during which they asked me, would you like to try the authentic rejuvenation phase? And I said, okay, what's that like? They said, it's 21 days of solitude, sitting in a hut and no stimuli for all your 5 senses. And you will be given the same kind of food every day for the 21 days. It's the same milk porridge-like thing in the morning and afternoon. And the evening, you have a medicinal rice gruel kind of a thing. And I said, okay, let's do that. And so there was no phone, there's no books, there's no music, there's no people to talk to. There's basically nothing. And all your senses are given nothing at all. And when I sat there, the first day was just that excitement of, okay, let's see what's going to be like. And the second day, there was just this explosion of, I can't call them thoughts as much as downloads. It's like something was downloading into my brain, because it had nothing to do and it has nothing to spend its energy out on. And I'm basically a loner. I lived alone for a long time during that. So I'm not lonely and I'm very happy alone. And then first this title came to mind. So it says The Autobiography of God. That's it. That's a thought. And I'm like, what? Okay, whatever. And I'm sitting there. And then a big picture of this big W with what, who, when, where, why, and one big question mark. I'm like, okay, I'm like, what, who, when, where, why am I? And a question mark. So literally the book downloaded into my brain, and then I didn't have paper or pen or phone or anything with me to take this down. So it literally had to get burnt into my brain. So over the 21 days, literally not just the book, a whole lot of other things like scripts and some very esoteric experiences, which I have not put down in the book, which might be part of the second book that I'm supposed to come out with. All the esoteric experiences may come up there. But that's how this book happened. So it literally came to me from the title to the five practical steps approach to the chapters and the way they came out. And it so if the way you asked me, why is it again 1, 2, 3 and then again 1, 2, 3? Because they're totally separate sections in themselves. Like, what am I is not at all who am I, because one of the chapters is called What I Am Is Not Who I Am. So I wanted to keep that distinction that it's not a continuum and it's not a flow from this into that. They are very separate aspects and dimensions of exploration. So I wanted to keep it that separate. And I guess the Penguin, our editors loved it the way it is. So they kept it that way.
Yeah, because usually, see, what happens with books is, right, you might have different sections, but the chapter goes in a sequence, like from 1 to 50 if it's needed. But in your case, like, you start with one, you go to an X number, then you stop, then you start with one again, then you stop, then you start with one again, and then
because
you start
every
again.
Every section is literally being treated as a separate book, as you may. It's like it doesn't really have to read together. Because even if you don't read the earlier section, the next section is going to stand alone.
Yeah. So would it be safe to say that before that, you said you were in solitude. I remember it took me to one of my favorite stand-up comedians and a very profound thinker. I would think people might be like, stand-up comedian, profound thinker. Yeah, this one was. His name was George Carlin. George Carlin had this routine where he used to say, what happened to doing nothing? What happened to just holding a stick in the park and just sitting on the park and doing nothing, where you just play with the stick? And, you know, as kids, we used to do that. And I remember growing up, even, and I was born in 1981, and in the India I grew up in, we would just do nothing for hours. Like, we would just do nothing. And in you come to 2024, where you have 60-second videos, you have a constant bombardment of information, where your brain is just charged up for no reason, and your brain is constantly in working. So how was that from a experiential perspective for you, where you just went from and in a country like India, where there are honking all the time. If we are in urban centers, there's honking all the time. There are different kinds of noises. Like, I mean, just a small thing, like when you and I are recording this, the first thing that I had to worry about is a background noise, because there is so much happening in the background in India. So how was that experience for you as a person, when you just went from so much dopamine or other chemicals being activated in your brain through just utter silence?
So one, we both share the same birth year. I'm also 1981. And so we pretty much know the same kind of cultural shifts that we've gone through. And for me, actually doing nothing is a full-time job. If I can avoid doing anything, I would. I would just sit doing nothing. And like when my friends call up and ask me, so what are you doing on Saturday? I'll be like, I'm doing nothing. And they'll say, then come, let's catch up. And I'll say, no, I'm doing nothing. I'm actually going to be doing nothing. A whole lot of it. Because I take that quite seriously. Because a whole lot of nothing is what led me to this understanding of where I am and where I've reached the space of absolute peace. Is in that nothing. And that nothing to me is that shunyata, which is that grander design. So getting there is, luckily for me, from childhood, it was something that attracted me. So I'd been a loner since childhood. I was not one of those kids who used to go running out and playing with friends as much. I would be with my books and some music and then a whole lot of nothing most of the time. So it was very easy for me, in fact. And that's why when the doctor told me 21 days of solitude, I was like, piece of cake. And I didn't expect this to happen, because it was not so much nothing. it went into a lot of things, like a book and the next book and another movie script and a whole lot of downloads, which I was not expecting.
So at the core of this book, and correct me if I'm wrong, and this is what I get from your book. And it's not a very big book to read also, by the way, who's going to be watching or listening to this, is they'll be like, yeah, good news. It's not a big book.
Yeah.
Because attention spans, right? These days, attention spans are an issue. And it's interesting. The last two books that I covered were like 600-page books, or on Kindle at least, there were 600 pages. And this one is not going to be that big. But at the core, to me, from my perspective, and I'm a materialist, right? I look at life and existence from a very, very materialistic perspective. To me, the core of this book is looking at thought from, I'm not saying a strictly Advaitin perspective, but from a very Advaita-inspired perspective. And the core of it is, it starts with I, right? So let's discuss and break down this I, because it all starts and ends with the self. And we're using this word self because of, let's say, lack of adequate words over here, because I don't know what other word am I supposed to use other than the self. Now, so what were your experiences? If I was to ask you, who are you, Lena? That's my question to you. So what would your answer be?
So who I am is very much Lena, an actress, author, whatever you gave as the introduction to Lena, is who Lena is. That is who life is in and as. Life in and as Lena is how I take the who aspect. Like we say, Amitabh Bachchan in and as Dawn. So it's like life in and as Lena. So that is the who aspect. And for me, this journey of spiritual exploration did not happen the studious way and then coming out and writing your exams and getting the results. It started with the result, just like the way the book happened. Like it just downloaded and then it had to be written. So it's like I read the book first in my head and then I had to write it out because it just was like a duty. Now you have to do this and you can't sleep if you don't do it. So the same way, this realization just happened to me over a very casual experience of a youngster. And though I pushed it with the questions that I asked, saying, what is God? Because I grew up in a mixed background. So I come from a mixed cultural and religious background. My dad is Hindu. My mom's Catholic. My sister is Islam, Muslim. My auntie is Sikh. And so there was no this proper structure for God in my head. So I was asking a genuine question, like, what is God and what's happening here and how is all this happening? How does all of this work? It was just a question and the answer popped up and I didn't know any Advaita. I did not know any philosophy. I had not been brought up in a spiritual background. And so the words of the book are later kind of, like you said, we have to find words that make bridges with other human beings so that you can convey. And those bridges are those words. And now actually my husband and I have these big conversations on all these things. And he's the one who told me, we need to set the context straight so that everyone talking is on the same page, because words can mean many things to many people. Or the same word can mean different things. So like if we use the word mind, what I mean by mind may not be what you mean by mind. And we may go off on totally different tangents and reach nowhere having that discussion. So I think I've wavered way away from your question, but somewhere around the way, I think I did answer it also.
Now, when it comes to the question of consciousness, right, there are many, many different answers to what consciousness is. And full disclosure, my biggest pet peeve these days in a lot of mainstream discussions on consciousness are how confident people sound when they talk about it. Because as far as I'm concerned, we actually we have not even explored 1% of our brain. And the true answer, if somebody wanted to say, as far as consciousness studies are concerned, is that nobody knows. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Everybody is like, whether it's David Chalmers, naturalistic dualism, or somebody like Daniel Dennett, who is more materialistic away from David Chalmers, whether it's pantheism, which a lot of Westerners nowadays, I think Western pantheism or the latest version of panpsychism, which is the latest fad in the Western world. And it's very interesting. It's it is inspired a lot from Eastern neurological models, panpsychism. And I, my biggest pet peeve is, bhai bol dena jidhar se liya hai. Matlab, at least acknowledge the source. No, they refuse to acknowledge the source, and it's my biggest pet peeve. Mm-hmm. But at the core of all of it, whether it's Chalmers or whether it's a lot of claims that we also make in the East, like my whole thing is like, how do we sound so confident when it comes to consciousness as a concept? Because like, if somebody asked me, and why am I doing this? Because your book actually discusses a lot of these things, like consciousness, like who am I? Like, if somebody asked me, like, who am I? I genuinely would be like, I am a cluster of cells is my guess. I'd be like, I'm a cluster of cells, because all I know is, as I speak to you right now, these thoughts appear somewhere, most likely in my brain. Do they originate in my brain? I am not confident about that, and I will not be like an Advaitin, be like, no, they originate in the larger Brahman, in the consciousness, and we are just tapping into everything is Brahman, right? Something of that sort, a version of that, they would say. Like, but how do we navigate this? Because this discourse is so, because you also take a mental health angle in this, right? Yes. You talk about your own experiences, and you're very clear. You don't tell anyone that just because X has worked for me, X will work for you. And I like that, because it needs some level of honesty and humility to tell people this. Listen, boss, this has worked for me. It may not work for you, but the process is, maybe we can start over here. Like, how do we deal with this idea of consciousness? And how did you deal with your own life, and what led you to come up with? And then we can talk about the steps itself.
Sure. So what happened is, like I told you, I was a confused kid with no idea how it's all of this happening, how is it working. And everybody usually gives the answer that everything was created by God, and that's how it is, and God runs the show. So I was like, okay, I'd like to know who God is then. Like, what is God? Or who is God? Or whatever. I just wanted that confusion and that existential angst inside me to end. It was just getting too overwhelming to not know anything really. Like, you don't know anything and you're still here. So I started from the very basics. Like, okay, the same way Descartes or anyone says, like, okay, my body, my mind. So who's saying my body and my mind? This was the first question. So I'm like, I am. Okay, then what is the I, right? So, and you're always stuck at that I. Like you said, I am saying this is originating in my brain. So who's saying that? Like, what is that thing? So I just need to know that thing, even if I can't put a word for it, or I just want to know that thing, that I, what is I? So this became such a burning need that it overwhelms you and does not allow you to focus on anything else. And then, like I told you, this whole, I start the book with that experience. So I cannot discount the psilocybin influence in that search. Because now research is being going on, and they're finding that these psilocybins are actually going to turn into our greatest medications for mental health, and in that direction. Because they are capable of shutting down our noisy brain, which is the rational side, which has hijacked everything. Like you said, we are not able to do nothing because there is an overdose of thinking. There is this overthinking pandemic happening, which is not allowing us to just be. And when we just be, we immediately know that I. Not that we'll be able to tell it to anyone. Not that I can share my experience of what I is. But I can give you the steps, the practical steps that I used, which I found that no spiritual books were giving you any practical tools that you could work with that made sense. One, it has to make sense to the rational brain, so that it is the gatekeeper. It should let this information in, where the esoteric, the illogical, the irrational can then maybe play with the idea. But if you don't make rational sense right at the beginning, in today's day and time, the rational brain is so worked a muscle, for lack of an example. It's like so overworked a muscle that it will not let anything else in. It has to be rational and logical. And so in this book, I don't talk about my esoteric, illogical, irrational experiences on the spiritual path, which everyone who has gone on that path has loads of them. And if you ask me, where does it come from? It comes from the subconscious. Those things which on a natural basis, you do not have to tap into. You don't. Your conscious brain just has to deal with all the things that you have to be conscious of. The spiritual journey is a journey into Pandora's box. It's literally just opening the box and saying, I'm getting right into it. And I'm going to see where this rabbit hole ends. And at the end of it, almost everyone reaches the same place of like where we were talking about nothing. Where there's really nothing, and doing a lot of nothing already gets you there. Now, everything else is just words. Trying to let other people, like giving them the tools. These tools worked for me. I reached the space where that existential angst ended. The anxiety, the panic of that existential angst ended. And there is no question of depression whatsoever. You cannot be depressed after you know what I know. And life is so smooth because you have no worry at all. The greatest worry of all for all human beings is the fear of death. And that's the first thing that disappears with this information. So now there's no question of fear. And once you remove fear, it's very easy to be relaxed and to be love. I wouldn't say in love, to be joy, to be peace. You be those things. It's not that you're trying to have those experiences. You are being those words, whatever those words symbolize. So that is the approach. And this book is written from that angle. So I'm just giving all the tools that I used with myself in my contemplation. And maybe it works. It helps someone on their path.
So let me throw you an example. Mm-hmm. All right. I have a job, for example, hypothetical. I'm just a lady or a man or whatever. I have a regular job. I just go to some random company. I go there, I come back, I have a child, I may not have a child, I live with my parents, because these are practical scenarios for all of us in India. We live with our parents, unlike the West, you know, we still do. And these are normal things. We have our regular issues in many cases in India. Someday the maid doesn't turn up, someday something doesn't turn up, someday the maid's maid doesn't turn up, because even maids have maids. Yeah. For those who did not know, maids also have maids. Because they have like those, it's amazing how well oiled the Indian system is. And we have everyday issues. And in such a scenario, what if that person comes up to you and says, well, listen, I have this job. I can't go to a 21-day retreat. So what do I do?
That's exactly. What you do is you go to the nearest penguin bookstore where you can get a penguin book, or you go online, which is even easier. And you get this book called The Autobiography of God. And everything I know, I have put into it as easily in practical terms. And everything I experienced, which are not practical and are very illogical. And I think you will agree with me on them, that they are manufactured by the mind. There's nothing out there that the mind has not created. So that's why I didn't put it in this book, because they are not practical and rational. And my experiences and my esoteric, fanciful, fantastic experiences will never be another person's experience, because they will have their own fantastical, like my dreams at night are not your dreams at night and can never be anybody else's exact dreams. And we can't share them. So that book, though, is going to be called The Autobiography of Goddess. And that is for those who like going down that spiritual rabbit hole. So this book is just practical terms for how we can tackle the big questions in life, which we usually do not ask. We avoid them like the plague, and we sit on top of them and we bury them. And over many years, like by the time you're 40, you have forgotten that you even have those questions. So when I ask people in my talks, like in my TEDx talk and all that, I ask people, so do you say my body? They say yes. I said, do you say my mind? They say, yes. I say, so who's saying that? And they just have that blank expression on their face, like they saw a ghost. And then there is this I, me. And then the obvious question comes up, what is this I or what is this me? And then there is this horrible silence in the room. So that is what I'm saying is Pandora's box. That's a lid. So just open it. And then it's not so scary at all. It's the fear is always like in the horror movies. It's that buildup. Is it and all the music and the buildup. The moment you open it, it's like, oh my God, there's a whole lot of work to do, which is what we were shirking. We were trying not to do the uncomfortable work of going and finishing all the pending business and winding up loose ends and doing our healing journey, making up for all our mistakes, owning up our shortcomings and all those little things, those practical little steps where you would rather not be here now. And in the book, I write about it. Being here now is being in your body. Your body can never be anywhere other than here now. Whereas you in your virtual reality can be anywhere. Like now I'm supposed to be wherever you are, or we are wherever the viewer is. And so time space is all gone haywire. But my body is always going to be here now. And that is where people don't want to be. We want to escape into virtual realities and we want to escape into fantasy land. And a lot of people call spirituality that. It's their it is their esoteric spiritual escapes, and they call it meditation. Whoa. Or many different things. So that's what's happening. People are looking at spirituality today as an escape route, and everyone has different kinds of meditation. These days they talk about this kind of meditation and that music guided meditation and that dance meditation and some other meditation. But meditation is not a technique. There are meditation techniques where you get to that place of nothing, doing nothing that we were talking about is meditation. And to get to that place, you should have actually finished all your work. Because what happens when you sit to meditate? You think, oh, I have to give the clothes for ironing. Why is that? Because you didn't do that. It's pending. And then you think, oh, I have to make dinner. Yes, you have to. So it should not be an escape from all that. So it takes a lot of realigning and creating a new comfort zone. I never say step out of your comfort zone. That's the stupidest thing to tell somebody. Why will they want to be uncomfortable? We want to be comfortable. I'm just saying expand your comfort zone. Keep expanding it so that you can be anywhere, anytime, and you will be comfortable. You'll be in the middle of any crowd and you will be comfortable because you're not thinking, oh my God, I hope nobody knows that I don't know who I am. And I don't know what I am. So I just hope nobody realizes that. And this is the way everyone is walking around. So if you don't know the basic answers to these basic questions, like what am I? Who am I? Where am I? When am I? And why am I? You are bound to suffer from anxiety and panic attacks and depression, which is like a pandemic right now. Everybody's going through it. Any second person you ask is on medication. And that is just not acceptable because what we are calling medication, it's better we just call them drugs, as they're usually called. Those drugs, they are brain destroying and they destroy all your organ systems. And I'm not going to be apologetic about saying this because I've been a victim of that system.
Now, so let's talk about it because you do mention it in the book also. So how did it bother you at a personal level? And I want to repeat it once again. It's this, she very categorically in the book states that I'm not prescribing it for the world. I'm just sharing my own experience. So what exactly happened there?
So what happened is that most people who are on a spiritual journey, they reach a point where they are not able to express themselves in words because you're going to reach a point where words are not going to be enough. And the moment you reach that place, you start to sound not rational and not logical till you bring common terms that people use or things that people have heard before. And then they tell you now you're not being original. But anyway, they don't understand you. And when people don't understand you, the easiest label to put on you is insane. And to support that thing, that misunderstanding, I didn't understand something requires you to be humble. But if you're an egoistic person, what are you going to say? You're going to say, there's something wrong with you, man. Why are you talking such bullshit? You're not saying I didn't understand it. You're saying the person said something is talking bullshit because you didn't understand it. And this is what usually leads people to be dragged to a psychiatrist's office because those around them did not understand what they were saying. So you have four people against one saying, we don't understand what this person is saying. And immediately it makes that minority wrong and very wrong. And we have hundreds and hundreds of ways in which you can be wrong. You can say something and immediately, oh, that's megalomania. You can say something else and it can be like, oh, that's grandiose thinking. Oh, and this is delusions. This is a delusion and that's a hallucination. And you can label everything all over the place. The moment you say, oh, that's depression. Oh, you have anxiety. Ah, that's a panic attack. And for everything, we have an immediate over-the-counter solution for it. Now the problem arises where those symptoms, those supposedly the only thing that is making sense between the people who are understanding and not understanding what is being said is the symptom. Now that everyone can see, oh, you're having problems sleeping, you're not eating as well, you seem off, you're not as productive as you usually are, where you get up, like you said, and go to work and do your work and come back home and look after your wife and your child and you pay the home loan. It's just that you stop being that rat on the wheel. And the moment you stop being the rat on the wheel, you have medicines which can get you back to being the rat on the wheel. And they will give it to you without any delay. That will be given to you immediately. And the problem is the moment you start taking it, now you have to take it because every time you get off that medication, you're going to show withdrawal symptoms, which are going to be very severe and which is going to make you look even worse than you were looking before you started. And now this is a vicious cycle. And you ask anyone, and I'm seeing that almost 2 out of 3 people I meet is on some kind of medication. They're either on sleeping pills or anti-anxiety tablets or antidepressants. There's not a single person I've met recently who has not had antidepressants at least at some point in their life. And this is not something that we can encourage because this is going to get worse with time, like you said, because our attention spans are worsening. We are doing less and less of nothing and doing too much of thinking and less work, actually. And the brain, only one side of it, like the side of rational and logical thinking alone, is on overdrive. So everyone's going to go through this pandemic of not knowing what we are. And I'm only talking about it from the need hierarchy. Like you take Abraham Maslow's need hierarchy. The top of that pyramid is self-actualization, the need for self-actualization. Nobody ever talks about that. We talk about it as though it is a step-by-step thing, like gravity applies to this and you have to start from roti, kapda, makan. And then you have to gradually like claw your way into belongingness and into self-esteem. And you're going to like crawl your way up that pyramid. Like whoever told us that gravity applies to Abraham Maslow's pyramid? I've never seen that it has to be this way up. It's like that ladder of success kind of idea. It's not that. And that's the main point I want to make with this book. I'm saying this is the prerequisite. You need to know what you are and who you are and just the basic things about yourself. If you don't know that, you're going to be in dilemma and confusion all your life and you're going to spread it to others and everybody's doing this all over the world. Whereas it's very simple. Let's just start from the topmost need. Or do we start from the bottom most need? Yes. Roti, kapda, makan? Yes. Those who don't have that are not going to think about self-actualization. But today, how many of us are in a position where we have reached up till the level of self-esteem, but somehow the top of the pyramid, we just think, that is not required. That's not a necessity. Like, that's not even a need. But I'm saying in this time where we have finished with the industrial age and we're done with the age of big data and that information explosion, everything is at our fingertips. There's nothing we cannot know by just searching in our phones. Just a search. You just need to know to ask the right questions, right? So the same way, we just need to know to ask the right questions about ourselves. And that is all it means when we say turning inward. It's not like you have to run away from society and go sit in some... Because I think me and my husband are like very spiritual people, but we are in the most material of lifestyles and occupations. We are not some sages who have run away to some mountain sitting in a cave, right? So that's the idea, that we stop, we debunk this idea that self-actualization is for a select few and that it's an option. I'm saying it is the basis, it is the foundation. We start with that and then we do whatever else we want to know once we know what we are.
See, so what I have gathered from what you've said right now is that there is a grave discomfort amongst ourselves, and it's something very interesting that the more higher in the financial ladder you go, right, the more you try to seek. Because to be very honest, there is a line in Hindi, and I'll translate it for everyone in English.
Like,
So I'm just for the audience, I'm just stating that bhuke pet bhajan na hove gopala, as in, you know, even on an empty stomach, you can't even sing a bhajan, is what they're saying. That you know, when because you spoke about Maslow's hierarchy too, and it's ironical that, you know, the person who wrote this line wrote it so many years ago. He did not know Abraham Maslow, but he basically said that I'm at the bottom of the tier. I got better things to worry about, like putting food on the table.
Yes.
That kind of scenario. So these things, the higher they go, like I have noticed this, that eventually Viktor Frankl also wrote this beautiful book about a man's search for meaning, where he says that he actually realized that basically inside Auschwitz, if I remember correctly, he was in the gas chambers, basically in and around the gas chambers, and he saw how his life was turning around him. And so if what I've understood is what you're trying to say is that you don't have to wait for, like in your book, you say that aha moment, right? Remember, if you have written, yes, about that. It's like, you don't have to wait for that aha moment. You can adopt a lot of these things in your day-to-day life when you are just surviving or living. Now the problem, like I honestly can understand where you're coming from, even though I don't look at it from your perspective. I look at it from a materialistic perspective. It's like, for me, these things are very normal, is because I've come to terms with, like, I'll share my own personal experience. I've come to terms with who I am as a person. I am fine with who I am as a person. I am very happy with what I do in my life. I'm very happy in what I'm pursuing in my life, even from a career perspective. I'm just fine with how things are. And it just came over a period of time to me, and I rationalized it in a very different way. I mean, I rationalized it in a materialistic way, where I believe we are, you know, we are a gene culture co-evolutionary product, and I just come from my genetics responding to my surroundings and my cultural mimetics, and it's just that I've come to terms with that. And like I even end my book by saying that I do not know if there is an afterlife, and I could care less about it. And that's how I have rationalized my life around it. And but I do sometimes feel people living their life in constant comparison with how's the, like, for example, I see content creators always like, उसके 4 लाख सब्सक्राइबर हो गए, मेरे नहीं हुए, उसका मिलियन हो गया, मेरा नहीं हुआ. एंड आई ट्रूली डोंट अंडरस्टैंड दैट, इज बिकॉज़ आई एम एक्चुअली नॉट लाइक दैट. आई जस्ट, माय ब्रेन डजंट अंडरस्टैंड व्हाई. इनफैक्ट समटाइम्स आई वंस इवन आस्क्ड माय सेल्फ, व्हाई एम आई नॉट बॉदर्ड बाय एनी ऑफ दीस थिंग्स. लाइक आई डोंट केयर हाउ मेनी पीपल वॉच मी or like me or care for me. I truly enjoy the process. And then somebody will be like, where did you learn from, Charvak? I was like, Shri Krishna. Because he said, you know, karmane vadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachan. And they're like, but tu to Charvak hai. I was like, allowed nahi hai kya Krishna se seekhna? Krishna never said Charvaks can't learn from him.
Exactly.
Krishna didn't stop. And so who the hell are you to stop me? But how do people, like a lot of people say things. Yeah. Lena, what I'm trying to say is, in Hindi, we say kathani or karni,
yes,
right? What we speak and, yes, what we do. So maybe the last bit I want to focus on is more a solution-based.
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot of hypocrisy. A lot of times I see people saying a lot of things without taking names of multiple authors that I have read in my life who talk about all hoity-toity things, but they are so full of shit.
Yes, yes. And
so
that's
how do we manage... Yeah, so how do we, because you talk about it, listen, you're going to be full of shit at times. Just deal with it. So that's
exactly
your basic message. Accept it. Take
We're
it
going
in
to be
the
full
process
of shit every morning till we go and dump it out.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so how do we deal with it?
How, so how do we deal with these... it is, one, I think it's chapter 3 in the first section of the book, which says, tell yourself the truth. at least tell yourself the truth, even if you don't tell anybody else, whatever it is. Like, yes, I behaved like a real, whatever four-letter word you want to call yourself. When you do something like that, don't blame it on somebody else. You have to own up your own end of everything. Like, the moment everybody doesn't want to turn out looking all rosy and, oh, I'm this perfect person and everything else in the world is wrong. The moment that approach changes, that's the beginning of truth. And to me, that itself is more than enough. Doing even that much is a huge step. So how I differentiate this whole spiritual journey and talk it from the Abraham Maslow pyramid point of view is the need is for self-actualization. But what we can do through our books and talks and everything is reach anyone up to self-realization. You can read this book, and at the end of the book, there is a QR code which asks you to print out the certificate. And please, just sign the certificate for yourself if you have realized the points in this book. It's called self-realization. You just realized what self is. Like you said, you came upon your own realization of the self, which you're very comfortable with. And that's another thing that I've written right in the introduction. I said, if you can ask these questions, what, who, when, where, why am I? And you can answer them to your own satisfaction, then this book is not for you. But if you are not able to answer these five questions to your own satisfaction, then let me help you with, share my tools with you. They might help you on that path. So anyone who is feeling dissatisfied in life, give it a try, because it's a very small book and it is very economically priced by Penguin Books. And it's a very practical guide. And I'm saying that as soon as you know what am I itself, you are actually kind of freed from that dilemma. And now anybody asks you who is saying my body, my mind, you have an answer. And that's as much as we need, really. We're done. Now self-realization is enough for me. I don't want to be self-actualized. Okay, fine. Leave it at that. So I'm going to tell you what I mean by the differentiation between self-realization and self-actualization. Self-realization is in the brain and we can upload it to mind. I'll talk about that on a totally different thing after the second book, perhaps, because I don't believe that the mind is owned by a person. And I've also mentioned it briefly in the book where I talk about it as a whole separate realm, like the internet and the smartphone. So we'll leave that for now. But what I'm saying is realization happens in the brain and the mind. But actualization happens in the body and the behavior and the moment-to-moment living it out. Are you walking the talk is the question. You can talk the talk if you have realized, but can you walk the talk is self-actualization. And I'm somebody who is every day, every second of my life, trying more and more to actualize, to walk the talk. I can talk the talk because I've been talking it in my head itself for the last 20 years, trying to contemplate and reach this finality so that I'm not confused anymore. Like you said, you reached your own lack of confusion in your own way. And that's more than enough. Yourself, you're realized about yourself. I know who I am and I'm comfortable with it. But are you being a hypocrite or are you actually living out that realization day in, day out? And that is self-actualization. Do you say something and act totally opposite is the first proof that you're not self-realized or actualized. So my job is not to be perfect. My job is to be more and more in alignment with my ideology, with my concept of self. And so far, it's been so brilliantly amazing a journey where I have no clue what's going to happen. That's why I said there's no agency of doing. I'm seeing life happen and I'm enjoying seeing myself happening and experiencing. So I think where we both will not differ at all in our ideology is in the experiential aspect of it. That everything boils down to, is it your experience? It has to be experiential. And that has been true for me. And my dad always says, you cannot just hear somebody say something and understand it, right? You have to like get hit by it. I'm like, others, why? Why would I? I love that movie called Aankhon Dekhi. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a brilliant movie. It's like, I will not believe something till I've seen it or I've experienced it. And that's the kind of person I've been. And I think that's what I found most fascinating about your podcast and your views as well?
Yeah, for me, the most amazing scene I've seen in a movie was, Anand was a movie that I absolutely adored, where Rajesh Khanna, you know, he knew he was in terms with his death and how he dealt with his death and how he maximized his days as in the Sharir and how he lived it. And the next one scene had a great moment. Intellectual impact on me was Will Smith in Pursuit of Happiness. And it's the ending of the movie where he just puts this hand up and they have this line, "This is happiness." That's all. That moment where he says, "Okay, I did it. Now, whatever happens after this, whatever happened before this, doesn't matter." And there's actually such a profound meaning in that I am in this moment. And in a very interesting way, the Buddha comes to that, this illusion of the self and consciousness being, bundles of thought where everything is connected moment to moment. And Advaita Vedanta explains the same thing, albeit in a slightly different way. Interesting.
I'd like to put in my thought, because you made this clear about how you think about the thought and the consciousness aspect. So you said, consciousness is a bundle of thoughts. For me, consciousness is not a bundle of thoughts. That is memory. I'm just saying how the same word can mean different things for different people. When I say consciousness, I do not mean anything to do with thought. I actually mean no thought. The thing that we both are calling nothingness, that nothing, doing nothing. I'm doing a whole lot of nothing, that meditation or whatever you call that. That is consciousness. So where do you go when you are meditation? That state to me is consciousness. It is just aware of nothing. It's not a thought at all. It is just aware of nothing. It's like a CCTV in a dark room. It is capturing everything, but there's nothing to capture. But it is capturing and it is aware of nothing. And that to me is consciousness, because I have been there. I've done so many practices for it, so many techniques to keep on experiencing that again and again. So it is just that you can shut off your creative brain. If you want to experience shunyata, you should be able to shut off your creative brain, which is otherwise continuously churning out thoughts. It is that ability to shut that brain off. And that ability leads you to this experience called meditation, which is the experience of nothing. And this is the most weird experience to have while you are a thing. You are a thing that is a body and you are experiencing yourself as nothing. And this is the ultimate paradox. And this is the experience that everyone is trying to get to. But this book is not telling you how you will get to that experience. It is just telling you how to cut the crap out of all the lies that you otherwise tell yourself, which are standing in the way of you getting to anywhere near that. Like, don't even call yourself spiritual if you are not trying to do the practical day-to-day things. And if you're trying to escape all that and go into spirituality, you're actually just repressing everything and sitting on top of a volcano.
Well, I hope people find true meaning in their life. I have always maintained this, that at the end of the day, existence to me at least is about while we are, as they say, the lights are on as far as we are concerned, is about finding meaning on a daily basis. And you know, the older you get, the less I see this struggle in men a lot more in India, far less in women.
Yeah.
I think women have far more meaning in their lives on average.
We were just talking about this afternoon. Just before this, I was talking with my husband about this. And I told him, do you realize that men actually, the more successful they become in life, like they have a huge bank balance and they've set everything for their children and everything is sorted out, they actually lose purpose in living. Whereas the mother has to wake up every day and cook and manage the house and everything. So she has a lifetime job. Whereas the dad has, the moment he has sorted out roti kapda makan, belongingness and self-esteem,
clueless.
Khatam. There's no need to exist if you don't have spirituality.
The amount of men, Lena, in my own extended family that I see having no meaning and they struggle for meaning. The amount of times I've said this to my childhood friend, my best friend who I meet all the time, I always tell him, my biggest concern for you is you are a workaholic. He's like, how is that a concern? I was like, जिस दिन तू काम करना बंद करेगा ना, तेरे लाइफ का मीनिंग खत्म हो जाएगा। अभी तू काम पैसा कमाने के लिए नहीं कर रहा है, अभी तू काम अपने आप को ऑक्यूपाइड रखने के लिए कर रहा है,
बस जिंदा रहने के लिए काम कर रहा है,
बस इसके लिए। और तुझे कुछ आता ही नहीं है। मैंने बोला ये बहुत रॉन्ग कर रहा है, बिकॉज ही इज लाइक मी, आई एम 43, इज लाइक स्लाइटली एल्डर, इज 44, बट आई कॉन्स्टेंटली टेल हिम, आई वाज लाइक यू हैव टू स्टार्ट इन्वेस्टिंग इन योर 55 एंड अबव मेंटल हेल्थ एट द एज ऑफ 30, एंड यू हैव टू प्लान लाइक विथ मी। कल को अगर ये पॉडकास्ट बंद भी हो गई, मेरी लाइफ में कुछ चेंज नहीं होगा। मैं तो किताबें पढ़ता रहूंगा, मैं तो किताबें पढ़ूंगा, दुनिया घूमूंगा, मजे करूंगा, ये सब करूंगा, क्योंकि मैं तो रोज यही करता हूँ। आई डोंट रीड बुक्स बिकॉज आई हैव टू डू अ पॉडकास्ट, आई जस्ट लव रीडिंग बुक्स, आई हैपन टू हैव अ पॉडकास्ट, दैट्स माई लाइफ। एंड व्हाट आई हैव रियलाइज्ड, अ लॉट ऑफ पीपल स्ट्रगल फॉर दैट, एंड इट्स गुड दैट यू रोट दिस बुक एटलीस्ट, बिकॉज व्हाट आई थॉट वाज यार मेरे को ये आंसर मिल गया, हर किसी को क्यों नहीं मिलता, अपेरेंटली हर किसी को नहीं मिलता, उनको बुक पढ़नी पड़ती
है। And I hope you will share your, I think in your book, you share how you reach the same space of like peace and happiness within yourself. And I'm sure
for
that
me,
is
my
going
book
to
is my journey as a Hindu and how I was very a violent militant atheist and how today I still have pretty much all those disbeliefs in me without the anger towards religion. In fact, I have kind of accepted religion. I have kind of admired certain aspects of religion, and I have, like, there is a chapter in the book where I say it's good, bad, but necessary religion at a conceptual level. I've just come to terms with it. I think everybody comes to terms with it eventually, and that's always been my message. Like, when I get emails from young atheists who are struggling with all these thoughts, I always tell them, don't be angry at religion.
Yeah.
Just deal with it in a more friendlier way. And I do understand it's not the same for atheists from every background. And I'm never going to deny it. Like, yeah, because I come from a Hindu background, it's just a cakewalk for me. And I understand that it's a different reaction from different religions. Like, people from Christian and Hindu backgrounds in today's world do not face that kind of anger, but other religions have different responses, but it's fine. But I still say there is hope in the world, and I am not that hostile to religion anymore. I'm hostile to bad ideas. But bad ideas could be from religion, could be from outside religion. So, Lena, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. I wish you nothing but happiness and success. And hopefully, you know, if I'm in and around your neck of the woods, we'll catch up sometime. But all the best for the book, and looking forward to the next one.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking to you.
All right, guys, we'll wrap it up. So as always, you know the drill. You'll have all the social media credentials and the link to buy the book in the description of the podcast. Go buy it. And here's the thing. If you read this book, it's a very short book. You can ask questions to Lena. Maybe she can answer them on her social media handles also. And she tells you to ask some basic questions about your existence, which I think everybody should ask about themselves. You may disagree with her answers, but you cannot disagree with her questions, is all I'm going to say about this book. And as far as I'm concerned, you know the drill. The Charvak podcast is not run on advertisements, but run on memberships. It's you, the members, who drive this podcast. So if you can, do think about joining the membership program, whether it's on YouTube, Patreon, Fanmo, wherever. And if you can't do any of that, just like, subscribe, leave a comment. And if you're an audio listener, leave a rating. I'll see you guys next time with another interesting book discussion. Until then, namaste. Take care. Bye-bye.